As she introduced me, I am Todd Searance, and here is a talk I'm going to give on quantum critical responses using holography and conformal perturbation theory. Which button is it? Okay. Okay, so I'm going to quickly go over the outline of this talk. First, I'm just going to give a short introduction to ADS-CFT. And more broadly, just gauge gravity duality, the interplay between conformal field theories and theories of gravity. And then I'm going to go into how we can decompose observables in conformal field theories when they are near their conformal fixed point, but have finite temperature and finite deformation. And finally, I'm going to talk about how we could use holography to probe these same functions and show that we can use models of holography to be able to gain insights into these observable conformal field theory properties. So to begin, let's talk about what a quantum critical point is. Here is a phase diagram, not of any specific material, but sort of a generic phase diagram, where we have two phases with a critical point between them, and our axes here are temperature, and we have some sort of deformation parameter that in some theories you can tune, in some theories we could invent them and tune away from conformal field theories. So quantum critical points are associated with continuous phase transitions. Some of the best understood instances of these quantum critical points are described by conformal field theories, which allows us to use holography to be able to gain some extra additional insights too. Basically, what a quantum critical point is a phase transition with a gapless energy spectrum. And you probably have seen examples of this. A very common example is when you use the Ising model in 1 plus 1 or 2 plus 1 dimensions, you get a quantum critical point. So to jump straight into ADS-CFT, one of the major aspects of it is the fact that operators in... Okay, so just to back up a bit, just a one-sentence example or description of what holography is when you have a conformal field theory in D dimensions, the assertion is that the mathematics are exactly identical to those of a gravitational theory in ADS space with an extra dimension. And so this next table here gives sort of an overview of how some of these properties are equivalent. And so, for example, if you have a scalar operator in a conformal field theory, we would say that it's dual to a gravitational scalar field in the bulk of the gravitational theory. Likewise, the stress tensor and conserved currents in the conformal field theory have their respective duals being the metric in ADS space and the electromagnetic gauge field in the gravitational theory. We also know that the scaling dimensions of the operators in the conformal theory are exactly mapped to the masses of these fields in the bulk. We could talk about this for a long time, but in the interest of time, we'll move on. So the goal that we set out was to be able to create a formalism for calculating the high-frequency corrections to observables in the conformal field theory. Namely, we were looking at linear response functions. So typically, two-point functions between operators in the conformal field theory, or more generally, near the conformal fixed point in a quantum theory. So how we do that? We have two corrections that we would like to account for. One is that caused by a scalar deformation of the conformal field theory, and the other would be caused by introducing temperature. And so we would see a correction, a high frequency correction due to this increase in temperature. And so generically, we're claiming that operators in the conformal field theory will have their two-point function. This value here is the conformal field theory fixed form of the two-point function of this operator. And we would have two additional corrections, one due to the scalar deformation and one due to the temperature. And both of them will come with a characteristic frequency, a power frequency that is associated with it. So just to give a small example of one of the situations we looked at the conductivity, and I'm going to show how you could use the operator product expansion of two vector currents to find the high temperature correction to the conductivity. So the AC conductivity is given by this formula with the two-point function of two vector currents. At non-zero temperatures, the expectation value of the of a marginal scalar will come into play. And we can see that by looking at this operator product expansion. If we look at high frequencies, we would see that the operator product expansion has this form with this characteristic scaling with respect to the frequency. And to see why it comes into play, we could take this operator product expansion and multiply both sides of the expansion by a scalar operator. And when we take the expectation value, we're taking the expectation value at zero temperature in this case. So at the zero temperature expectation value, we have that the expectation of the scalar should go away. And what we're left with is a way to write CJJO, this constant here that comes in from the three-point function. It can be described as a quotient of the three-point function JJO and this two-point function OO. Sorry, CJJO comes in as the operator product expansion constant. So once we have that, so we could also do this with the scalar two-point function, and this is a sort of a general expansion you can do to get leading order corrections to these two-point function observables. So the idea is, once again, to build a bridge between these conformal field theory observables and to be able to find the leading order expansion to these two-point functions using known CFT data. So how we could use holography to be able to aid in this. So here is an example holographic model that we could use to probe these JJ two-point functions and OO two-point functions. And essentially the main ingredients, in the interest of time, I won't go through all of it, but we have the vacuum Einstein equation. We have a scalar field action, and we are sourcing it with the Weyl tensor, a gravitational tensor. We also have another scalar in the theory. This is going to be sort of the, I'm going to back up a bit. There's going to be two fields that we're interested. We have the scalar two-point function and the vector two-point function. They're going to be corresponding to the Maxwell field for the vector two-point function and to a scalar field for the scalar two-point function. But we're also introducing a probing marginal scalar, which is deforming our theory, and that's going to come into play from this phi field. And so here is an action that uses the action for a scalar field here and here, and also the action for a Maxwell field. But we're also coupling the deformation scalar to the Maxwell field, to the scalar field, and to gravity. And so to show you what kind of game we're trying to play here, What we're trying to do is build a bridge between the observables and the conformal field theory with these bulk couplings that we've introduced. And so, for example, these observables we were talking about before, CJJO and COOO, they correspond with the interaction couplings from the bulk theory. And so what we can do is we can use ADS-CFT and start talking about two-point functions in the sense of ADS-CFT. And the way we do that is we would construct a formalism.
Can you go back there?
Sure, yeah.
I got confused between the two-scale of psi and phi.
Sure, okay. So the main aspect of this project is that we have a conformal field theory, and it's being deformed by a scalar operator. The scalar operator could come in some theories it would be used to tune to a critical point or to tune away from a critical point. And so we're looking at the effect that this marginal, relevant deformation has on the system. And so that's the field phi. So phi, we want phi to interact with the two-point function of the gauge field, and we want phi to interact with the two-point function of the scalar field. So psi and f, or psi and a, really a is embedded in this f, they are the dynamic fields that we're interested in, and phi is an operator in the theory that is deforming the conformal field theory. Yes, yes. Psi is dual to some characteristic operator. If we were interested in some scalar two-point function, psi would be, we're letting psi represent the dual to that field. But phi is representing the dual to this relevant operator that is deforming the conformal field theory. How much time? Okay, so this is just to show what kind of game we're playing, that there is a bridge that we're building between bulk couplings and observables in the conformal field theory. And how we go about building that dictionary would be going through this process of finding bulk boundary propagators and using these propagators to be able to calculate higher endpoint functions. And so some examples, we can calculate some two-point functions by looking at the near boundary behavior of the gauge field, the gauge action and the scalar action. Similarly, we can calculate three-point functions by gluing three of these bulk boundary propagators together and evaluating the action on shell. So one of the main points is that we have this marginal, this relevant operator phi that is deforming the theory, and the dual to the theory is going to have some expansion that has characteristic scalings of u to the d minus delta and u to the delta. This scaling is proportional to the one-point function of the operator, and this scaling is proportional to the source. So if this scaling is zero, we're still lying at the fixed point of the theory. And if it's not, we're not at the fixed point. So I'm not going to go through this, but this is essentially what holography gives us for the first two corrections to the scalar, the connectivity, the JJ two-point function. But we could also add temperature by introducing a metric with a black hole. The black hole provides temperature. And I'm just going to give the cliff notes for how this is all done. We would have to solve the equations of motion for a scalar field. They're pretty horrible, but at least they can be done in closed form. And with that, we can seed the gauge field. And so the gauge field is used to give you the connectivity. The connectivity is given, let's go. The connectivity is given in terms of the gauge field as such. So all we need to do is calculate the gauge field in this theory. That's not too bad. We have an equation of motion. We just need to evaluate it numerically. There's a few tricks to be able to do that. One being we would create a field redefinition so that we can regularize a divergence near the horizon, and after we regulate that divergence using the infalling boundary conditions, we're able to integrate that solution and calculate the connectivity. So here's a couple pretty pictures of connectivities that we've calculated for various choices of space-time dimension and conformal dimension. And to see how close the conformal field theory predictions were for the corrections and for the exact calculation, here is the numeric model, the holographic model's calculation for the scalar two-point function, subtracting the free solution. And so we see that the green dots are the difference between, the green dots is the calculated correction, and the orange is the expected correction. This is a log-log plot. So we could see that at high frequencies, it indeed follows this power law behavior that we expect. And also for the conductivity, we get a similar behavior. And finally, if we add if we deform away from the critical point, we could see that, so in d equals 3 and delta equals 2, we would see a slope of 1. We would see that the long-term behavior should be a slope of negative 1 because of the scalar deformation, but if it's at a critical point, which it is currently, it would be a slope of 2. So if we let this play, I'm going to dial on the away from the critical point, and we can see that the exact values for the model at high temperatures matches the correction that we anticipated due to the deformation. Okay, so I'm out of time. So I'll just leave this slide up, and we can conclude there.
Questions for Todd? We still have about 2 minutes for questions.
A random question. I think category theory was invented to allow to compare mathematical models and then very different theories. So, and in my end of the spectrum, which is relativity, I haven't heard any category theory of the ADS duality. Is that a thing? Is no one looking at that, or is it way too complex
for
it to be exposed to relativity?
So, I'm just going to answer that in the one thing I think of when I think of category theory, and that's commuting diagrams. And so for the last 15, 20 years, the argument for ADS-CFT has been in this strong coupling limit going two different ways. I can't remember exactly the fine details of it, but you start off with a theory and you take strong limits in two different directions, and the idea is when you get to the same point, it's the same theory again, and you get the ADS on one side, and you get the conformal field theory on the other side.
Okay.
That's the only thing I can think of with category theory when it comes to this. I'm sure people have studied it, but I have no idea.
When you introduce that other auxiliary field, the probing field in graphing, why does it have to be coupled to graphing?
This talk is pretty short. That is sort of one of the main ingredients for this model. The point is that if you would just, so if I go back to the Einstein equations, so if you wouldn't have this coupling, what you have here is just an action where all the fields are sourceless. So the only solution would be that all the fields would be null. There are vacuum solutions to Einstein's equation, but let's say we say that non-perturbatively, so if we take all the, I'm claiming that if we start with no gauge, so it's chargeless, so the gauge field is zero, there would be nothing to source any of these scalar fields, and so everything would be zero. If you did happen to turn on a charge, for example, then there would be a finite gauge, and then this coupling would source the scalar field. And so you wouldn't need to go through this this exercise. The reason why we did it this way is it also provided a continuous way of controlling the scalar one-point function to have the correct scaling behavior with respect to temperature. So when you turn on the temperature, this vial tensor turns on, and so the scalar field turns on. And so it happens in a very natural way. But it was a way to source the equations of motion to have plots that weren't all just non-interacting.
Let's thank Todd one more time.